Our next case this morning is case number 102094, United States versus Willie McBride. Ms. Krause.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court, Ms. Nome. I represent Willie McBride. He pled guilty under a conditional plea agreement. We had pursued a motion to suppress. The trial court denied the motion to suppress, and we are now pursuing, obviously, an appeal on that. The issues in this case, or the sole issues in this case, is whether or not the length of the stop, this was a traffic stop, exceeded what was reasonable, which caused the seizure to become unlawful, and therefore the search of the vehicle, which produced both the guns and the drugs, was unlawful. I thought you were going to say something. Willie McBride's driving down the road in northern Indiana. He gets pulled over for some traffic violations. There is an in-car video which is running the entire time that the traffic stop occurs, and we're able to pretty specifically know minute by minute or even second by second how things are pursuing. The officer gets Mr. McBride out of the vehicle pretty quickly, and without being able to articulate that, the officer articulating that he thought that Willie was armed and dangerous, he asked Willie if he could pat him down, and Willie gave consent to allow himself to be patted down. When the officer was asked at the motion to suppress to articulate why he thought he should do the pat down, he says, other than his initial movements when I pulled him over, it's just what I typically do. No weapons and no contraband were found during the initial pat down. The officer then engaged in what he described as casual conversation. He started asking questions not related to the scope of the stop. The original stop was for speeding, for a license plate not being in display where it should have been, and I think he was too close to the car in front of him as well.
And he had a suspended license.
He found out later that he had.
Oh, okay. When did he find that out, I guess?
At what part into it? You know,
it seems to me that we sort of skipped over that. I don't know why, but it seems to me that's a pretty important issue. Are they going to just turn him loose when he's driving without a license?
Well, I think the police officer has discretion. In Indiana, it is not an offense. Driving with a suspended license is not necessarily a criminal offense. If it's a first offense, it can be an infraction, and he can be issued a citation. He can't drive the vehicle away, of course, but if the passenger, and I understand that the passenger did not have any...
He didn't have any ID.
Correct.
So how are they going to leave?
Well, I have seen, and the officer could have given him a ride somewhere. They could have called for a friend to come and pick them up. The officer could have had the vehicle towed, but none of those inquiries came in the evidence in the hearing on the motion to suppress.
Well, there would have been an impoundment of the car, right, under those circumstances, and search conducted in connection with that.
If the car had been towed, obviously they could have done, the officer could have done an inventory, and then pursuant to that inventory, I suppose we're talking inevitable discovery at that point. But the issue that we focused on at the hearing and that is part of this appeal is the reasonableness of the length and the scope of the stop. There were questions.
That's governed by the Childs case, as I recall, which is a case I remember quite well because I wrote a very lengthy dissent. But it's an interesting case, and it was primarily concerned with scope rather than timing, as I recall. And I don't remember exactly where it left timing. There seems to be a little difference among the circuits, I think, on some of these issues. But here you're just taking a view of that you can't extend the timing of the arrest. Is that correct?
The reasonableness of the length of the stop. And in that regard, it is timing. And there's no, the law is clear that there's no bright line rule whether or not it's one question or 1 minute or two questions or 2 minutes. But if at some point it becomes unreasonable, then we have to determine at what point. And this is a factually sensitive question to this case. In this particular case, the questions that Officer Gasbota asked of both the driver and the passenger, the inconsistencies, which quite frankly were not at all relevant to the nature of the traffic infraction, which he was supposedly investigating, almost immediately upon the stop occurring, Officer Heck, who's the second officer, appeared, and there's a dog sniff that goes around, which the dog alerts to nothing. Officer Gasbota, I think the record indicates that he gave some signal to Officer Heck that something was up, but at the point, and that was pretty early into the stop, because the dog sniff, my recollection is, occurred prior to Officer Gasbota getting into the vehicle, his vehicle, and doing the computer check, trying to find his license. And so, but he's already signaled to Officer Heck that something is up. So Officer Heck goes and does the sniff, and nothing is detected. It is also in the record that when Officer Gasbota got into his vehicle and starts to talk to dispatch, he says, "Josh, help me figure these two out." And at this point, he's working on a hunch is all he's working on. He's done it.
No, he's working with probable cause. This is a probable cause stop. And the probable cause for the original stop, which is speeding, license, no license plate, and illegal lane change, that probable cause is amplified by the fact that he doesn't have his driver's license. You know, regardless of when the suspension of the license was confirmed, he doesn't have it on his person, which is an additional violation. So this is a probable cause stop, not a reasonable suspicion stop, and the rules are different.
You're correct, Your Honor. The probable cause for the traffic violation, for the speeding and for the driving too close and for the improper driving, the license plate, the probable cause for that is established. A seizure has occurred at that point, but it's the continued questioning beyond the scope of what is necessary to determine.
That's the standard. What you're about to say is the standard that applies to a Terry stop and the extension of a Terry stop, not a probable cause stop. Standard is different. The amount of time that a person detained on probable cause can be questioned isn't subject to that rule about, you know, only so long as the officer needs to dispel the original suspicion. And well, the nature of the questions that can be asked is not also similarly circumscribed by that rule. That's one of the subtexts of the Child's opinion in terms of the timing issue.
Correct.
Okay. Are we talking scope or timing?
In my mind, scope is timing. As far as the scope of the stop includes the purpose of the stop and the time it takes to complete that investigation. Thank you.
May it please the Court, Tina Nome for the United States of America. In this case, the challenge was made to the length of the stop, and the district court did the right thing in terms of looking at the audio and video, as well as listening to the testimony of the officer, to determine that this stop really took about 19 minutes from the time that the car was pulled over for the traffic offense until the time the ticket was written was approximately 22 minutes. The court went back and determined that there were 2 minutes she believed that the stop may have been prolonged by questioning of the driver and the passenger. Now, what the court found initially was 19 minutes were spent doing law enforcement duties. They're pulling over a car that doesn't have a visible plate. They're pulling over this vehicle for speeding. And when he approaches the passenger side, the driver doesn't have a driver's license. He has an Illinois ID card. The passenger doesn't have any ID on him, can't give a complete SOSH number. So the officer is writing down the information from the passenger, and the driver is looking for the paperwork to show that he, in fact, had purchased this vehicle. Once the officer is able to collect the information, which takes, I think, in the district court's determination, about 5 minutes, he asked the defendant, the driver, to step out of the vehicle and come back to his car so that he can talk to him about the purpose of the stop. And that's when he engages in conversation with the defendant, and Judge, that's when he finds out that the defendant admits his driver's license is suspended. It had expired. I think the technical term was that it had expired. He didn't have a driver's license. So the officer then at that point starts asking questions. This is when the district court determined there is 1 minute of discussion with the defendant about his travel plans. Well, where are you from? Where are you going? What are you doing? After spending that 1 minute with the defendant, then the officer goes up to the passenger to let him know in the car, look, I'm going to be looking at the VIN number. I'm going to be opening the door. I'm going to be checking things for this plate. I pulled you over for these reasons. Oh, and by the way, what are you doing with this defendant, and what are your travel plans? So the district court determines that there's an additional minute there. So what the district court found was there might have been 2 minutes out of the duration of this traffic stop that might have prolonged it. But looking to the case law and looking to the Muriel decision, which is another case out of this circuit that says asking about travel plans is appropriate and doesn't unreasonably delay the traffic stop, the district court found that the 2 minutes out of the 19 was negligible and was a minimal intrusion. The officer wasn't sure.
What is the standard of timing of one of these stops? Is it reasonableness or what?
As the court has decided in the Child case, we just use a common sense approach. We can't use any specific set amount of time. I think in the Child case, it may have been 28 minutes. I've seen other stops that are 18 minutes. But they're so fact-driven in terms of what you have here are two guys we don't even know who they are, and we have to identify them. We have to deal with this issue of the car and the plate. And so that's going to take a little more time than in a case like the Muriel decision where they said who they were and had ID and it was easy to check it. I think it took 12 minutes for the officer to run the checks on these two individuals. And we had a problem because Illinois was not responding, so there may have been a computer glitch. And we weren't able to get any verification about who these two individuals were. When the officer then decides to write the ticket, he steps out of the vehicle and he tells the defendant, and I'm going to write you this ticket. Here's why I'm giving the ticket. This is what you need to do to take care of this ticket. And at that point, then, he decides, well, you know, the defendant hasn't really – he noticed he was nervous right at the beginning. And he thought, if I give him this ticket, maybe he was just nervous about having a ticket, and so he'll be fine. But he kind of watched his demeanor, and when he gave him the ticket, the defendant still appeared to be a little nervous to him. So the officer said, I asked him a question. I thought I'd lighten it up a little, and I said, well, do you have any dead bodies or anything in the car? And the defendant right away knew exactly what he was asking and said, no, do you want to search?
In Wisconsin, we call these badger stops. What do they call them in Indiana?
I'm not sure, but
where the stop is pretty much concluded, and then there's a pivot by the officer, and consent to search is requested, but it's usually done in this way. You know, got anything in the car that you shouldn't have?
Right.
I've never heard the dead bodies variation of this before. But
I had not either, and this particular officer has a different sense of humor, and this is what he decided he would do to lighten it up, as he called it.
Got the consent.
And so he got consent, and there was, you know, no guns drawn, asking him on more than one occasion. The individual said, sure, you can search. You want to search? And the officer said, I would like to search. And you'll have all this on the video. The audio is great. You'll be able to hear and see it. You know, this officer went out of his way to get a coat for the defendant because he was standing outside and he was cold. In each instance where consent was sought, we didn't need reasonable suspicion. We simply asked for consent and we were given consent. So the other thing that was challenged, I think when we were talking about your badger stop, is the Child's case says these individuals that are pulled over for traffic offenses must be asked 1,000 times a day. Have you committed any other crime? Or do you have anything that you shouldn't have? So these questions that officers ask have been upheld by this circuit in 2002, which really, before it had been addressed by the Supreme Court, who later came out in subsequent years and reaffirmed a lot of the principles that were decided by this court in Childs. So it's our position that based on Muriel and based on Childs, that this stop was not unreasonably prolonged. It's also our position.
What case is that?
Muriel, M-U-R-I-E-L. It was a 2005 case. And the question there was individuals being asked about their travel plans. The driver was asked questions about his travel plans, and the passenger was asked for over 4 minutes about his travel plans and his ID. That specific issue was addressed and found that it was okay to ask those types of questions about ID and about the travel plans, and that it did not unreasonably prolong this traffic stop.
Wouldn't it be reasonable to ask about travel plans if it's true that he has the option, seems weird, to let him go with no license? If they said, well, we're going straight home.
Well, at this point, he hadn't...
As opposed to traveling some distance without a driver's license.
Well, he hadn't written the ticket, and he wasn't sure what he was going to write the ticket about the officer. I mean, he knew that there wasn't a visible plate, and he had to check that out. And
when at that point, did he know there was no driver's license at that point?
He knew there was no driver's license at the point before he asked him about the travel plans.
Yeah.
And that's when he was kind of suspicious, and in his gut,
Well, it seems that point, I'm trying to put myself in his shoes, that you might want to know, are they going to drive some short distance to go someplace, and that's it? And he may say, well, okay, you go there and don't leave because you got no license. Or he said he can't go anywhere because you don't have a license. We didn't get that far. And I'm just wondering if it's kind of a ruse about it. I didn't hear about the Badger stop.
You know,
I don't think they call it a Hoosier stop. But whatever,
and
whatever,
Bobby Knight would be proud,
whatever
I'm sure.
It is, it's obviously kind of a ruse. And it's supposed to let them... guard down. Yeah, I got bodies in there. Said, but you know, I don't want anybody to look at them, you know, or something. I don't know what he was expecting the answer to be.
You know, and I don't either. And
he
when
took
he
advantage
asked
of it as soon as he got it.
He did. And when he asked him about the travel plans, he didn't say that. He said it was casual conversation. I think he was just trying to talk to him, just to find out, because he had no idea who these guys are.
Sure, it's just like at the train station. You keep them talking until eventually you find out old Rex is going to sniff your baggage, you know.
And then you get them a coat when they're cold, and you take care of them, and you're polite to them, and then.
Well, it just seems that that's sort of the elephant in the room, is that driver's license. He doesn't have one. And why that even, that didn't end it, frankly, to say, you know, you can't go.
Right.
But maybe he thought it was going to eventually get there.
And
maybe
I think
he would have said, oh, incidentally, you don't have anybody in the trunk, but we do have a problem with this license. Maybe that would have been the next statement. I don't know.
It could have been. And I think that this this particular officer just was covering all bases, and some of it may have just been something that he was just having, in, like you said, general conversation that kind of ended up going somewhere he didn't anticipate to go. But certainly this 19 minutes and the additional 2 minutes, which is 22 minutes total, consent was obtained at 23 minutes, and the case law in this circuit is you look to the time between the stop and the consent, which would be the total 23 minutes, and it's our position that the district court committed no error. We would ask that you affirm the denial of the motion to suppress and Mr. McBride, Mr. Davis's conviction. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Krauss. You have a minute and a half.
I hope not to use all of it. The only thing that, as I went back and reread the court's opinion, which details the fact of concerning the driver's license is that it was expired and not suspended, which in Indiana is a factual distinction. With an expired license, the officer can allow the person to leave after having given a citation. If it's a suspended driver's license, then there is the need to have somebody else remove the vehicle. So there is a distinction under Indiana law between expired and suspension, and I do believe that the evidence here, the conclusion from the district court, was that it was an expired Illinois driver's license and not a suspended. I would ask that you would reverse the denial of the motion to suppress. Thank you.
Thank you. And our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. And Ms. Krauss, you were appointed to represent your client in this case. You have the thanks of the court for your service to your client and the court.